Yeah, Namo Om Vishnupadaya. I don't know if you can hear me. I mean, this one maybe should go off. Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Isi Mati Bhakti Vedanta Dinamane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paschachade Satarane Omanganam Timarandasya Gananjana Shavakaya Chaksur Niritam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So, hope everybody can hear me. That's a lot of noise. It's coming from the back end of the air conditioners on the other side of the street. This is from Bhagavad Gita. Second chapter. Text number 57. Ya sarvatra nabineseha tat tat prapya shubha shubham nabinandati na dvesti tasya prajna pratishta. He says that in the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. And Prabhupada says in his purport, he says, there is always some upheaval in the material world, which may be good or evil. One who is not agitated by such material upheavals, who is unaffected by good and evil, is to be understood to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. As long as one is in the material world, there is always the possibility of good and evil, because this world is full of duality. But one who is fixed in Krishna consciousness is not affected by good and evil, because he is simply concerned with Krishna. But he's upset. Who's all good absolute. Such consciousness in Krishna situates one in perfect transcendental position called technically samadhi. Arjuna has asked Krishna to describe the condition of a person who is, as he puts it, merged into transcendence. Sthitadi, who's intelligence is steady. Samadhi stasya, situated in trance. That's what he wants to explain. So here, in part of his explanation, is Prabhupada says here, this is the world of duality. Duality means, you take the basic ones, good and bad. There's the things that we want to happen to us, which we call good. And there's the things that we don't want to happen to us, which we call bad. It's a simple thing. People may differ in their evaluation of what's good or what's bad. But basically, for everybody, there's the good things and the bad things. People are busy trying to maximize the good things and minimize the bad things. It's good to eat, it's bad to go hungry. So people are busy trying to make sure they get enough to eat and avoid going hungry. Maybe it's good to have money and bad not to have money. Or maybe you're a reverse person. Maybe money is bad and not having money is good. Whatever it may be, People are working that way. So what they're trying to do is control their lives, because our happiness depends upon good things. So we have to control. Because, like for example, I have some children. So I want to make sure that everything goes well with my children. In order to have good children, they have to be well behaved. They have to get good grades in school. They have to go on to the college of my choice. They have to bring praise upon their... I have to be able to go into my friends and say, my son or daughter, they got admitted to Yale or something. These are good. You know. When my child is busted for smoking dope, when my child flunks out of school, when my child joins the Hare Krishnas, these are bad. So now I have to, in the process, I have to exercise some control over what happens to my children. So therefore, endless anxiety. I have to control them. I have to make sure they get good grades. I have to make sure the school system is a good school system. I have to try to exercise some control over that. I have to watch what music they're listening to, what friends they're going out with, and so on, so on, so on, and so on. All these anxieties are there. And still it doesn't work out, even though I'm trying so hard. I kind of find out things are out of control. Well, everybody's trying to control. That's just one example, of course. Just to keep the flow of money coming properly, I try to control that. And so I work hard, I satisfy my employer, I flatter my boss. Still, something happens up in the higher levels of mergers and acquisition. My company is bought out by another company, even though I've been an exemplary employee. They tell me they don't need me anymore, and I get laid off. In spite of all my efforts to control and be perfect and everything. So I get involved in politics, try to control the economy a little more. And work that way. But that's also, I find, is fraught with hazard and difficulty and so on. Anyway, everybody tries to control, get control over the elements in their lives to try to get what is good and try to avoid what is bad. So we just discover that it's endless anxiety and try to do this, because we find out that actually we don't have a whole lot of control. And mostly, a lot of it depends on this other factor, which people call luck. Or maybe I'm fortunate, or maybe I'm unfortunate. I don't know. But the real problem is that no matter how much control we exercise, ultimately, there's a few things we can't control. One thing we can't control is we're all going to get old. Another thing we can't control is we're all going to become diseased. Of course, right now, there's a big attempt to control that process. The whole nation is, or a big chunk of it's worrying about, some kind of medical insurance system that's going to assure everybody access to medical care. But it will not stop the process of disease any. We've got a big medical technology, we've got hospitals, we've got well-trained doctors, all these things, and still The disease is coming, is it not? People are trying to get control over disease. Actually, the fact is that you should know that the result of all medical progress has been that it used to be in the last century people were dying of typhus and typhoid and smallpox, diphtheria. So that's a little quaint, right? And they've talked about we've conquered those diseases. The result is people are dying of heart disease, cancer, emphysema. Now, of course, another one that wasn't around the last century, AIDS. So you get rid of some diseases and simply it's replaced by others. And even some of the old ones like tuberculosis are coming back again. That's the process. The process is disease is going to go on. And all your efforts of control, naturally we try to control. We get sick, we go to a doctor. So we have to get cured from the disease, then we have to get cured from the cure. A lot of times. But whatever it is, disease is going to be there. Just like we try old age is getting there. And, you know, people comb their hair and they see all this hair. Men, they see the hair is starting to come out. And then they want to start to control that, you know. So they're buying ointments and lotions to put on their hair to keep it coming out. And they're contemplating hair transplants and all these other things. And all the different hairpiece industries are there, you know, because don't want to grow old. And people are fighting off the wrinkles by various methods of huge industry of cosmetic creams and things like that to keep the wrinkles. And of course, you may ultimately go to the doctors who can cut your skin right about here, then stretch it tight, sew it back on again, and do that every 2 or 3 years. Until, you know, you're maybe 60 years old and have no wrinkles, but your face is like a frozen mask. You know. Somehow or other, you still get old, no matter what. So people want to be young forever, and they simply declared war on the material nature. They're going to fight material nature, but guess who's going to win? So we don't have control. We don't have control over material nature, which dictates that we have to grow old, that we have to become diseased, and ultimately it dictates that we have to die. This is another thing. We're all engaged in a struggle to survive, for survival. You see all the animals in the jungle, they're trying to survive. You see all the animals in the streets of Philadelphia, they're trying to survive. But you take all of everybody right now is trying to survive and you ask in 100 years, where's the successful survival? You'll find out the failure rate's 100%. In the struggle for survival, everyone is a loser. So what we're trying to do is control. To control material nature. So we can maximize the happiness or the good things, whatever we call good, and minimize the bad things, but ultimately we lose. And even if temporarily it looks like we're getting, you know, keeping some good things coming and avoiding some bad things, the price we pay for it in anxiety, somehow or other it takes it out of our hide, you know. Like a good thing for me to have money, so I can keep the money coming. But what I have to do to get that money is so bad. Work means you have to spend at least 8 hours a day doing something you don't like. The majority of the time of your life is spent in activities that you do not like to do. Why is that? What's wrong that has to, you have to live like that? So yeah, you've got your money, but look what price you're paid for it. I have to spend most of my time doing things I don't like to do. That's pretty hellish, isn't it? So for all the control to get the good things and minimize the bad things, it doesn't work out. So here Krishna is recommending another effort. I mean, actually, it's also an attempt at getting control in a way. But that control comes in a different path. From giving up the effort of trying to control material nature. And instead become situated in Krishna consciousness by becoming detached from the course of material nature and to be unaffected or indifferent to whatever good or bad that comes, neither praising it or despising it. You can imagine that somebody that when something good fortune comes, they're happy. And when evil comes, they're just as happy. That's what he's saying. What he's talking about here. A person who's unaffected. The ups and downs are going on. The economy's booming. The economy's busting. Yeah. Don't you know, I mean, the whole economy's going through these cycles of boom and bust. And the whole country is freaking out trying to control it. Either they're trying to figure out how we can get our hands on the economic cycle, or sometimes you see books, you know, how to profit from the coming depression, or that you can somehow or other turn a bust into boom. But at any rate, here's another course that your happiness does not boom or bust. You're just as happy. How is that possible? Krishna is talking about such a person. One who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated where there is happiness, who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. He's describing this person. Threefold miseries. I'll explain the threefold miseries. The miseries in the material world are said to come from three different sources. First of all, they're the miseries caused by other living beings. The mosquito that bites you, or the stranger who shows up and shoots a gun at you. That's miseries caused by other living beings. Whatever it may be, the car that runs you over on the street, the boss that fires you from the job, the mosquito that bites you, the thousand ways you can be assailed by other living beings, whether they're invading troops or... So that's one, those caused by other living beings. Second, miseries, those caused by your own body and mind. Sometimes the other living beings are microorganisms that invade your body and set up camp and do their own thing with it, viruses or germs and whatever. And sometimes, even without anybody coming in from the outside, your own body just screws up on its own. Or your own mind is hellish. Causes you trouble. Maybe you become attached to some other person. In fact, you become attached that you become obsessively jealous. And all the time you're thinking this other person is going to come and, you know, like somebody else. So you got to follow them around. You got to worry. Every time they go out, you say, where have you gone? Who have you seen? Who have you talked to? That's troubles caused by that person, innocent person, but, you know, you've got this thing. I was just talking to somebody like that the other day. That's troubles caused, I mean, her own mind. She's got a husband that's perfectly faithful, completely happy, but somehow or other she thinks he's talking to other women all the time. That's trouble caused by your own mind. Sometimes you just go crazy. That's the second kind of misery. One caused by other living beings. Maybe you've got a partner that's unfaithful or whatever. Second is caused by your own body and mind. You got a perfectly faithful partner, but still you're freaking out. So, third kind of miseries are what insurance companies like to call acts of God. Like in Georgia, there's a big, huge flood. Those kind of miseries. Floods, earthquakes, drought, forest fires, those sorts of things, volcanic eruptions, tidal waves, those kind of things. Those are the threefold miseries. So the threefold miseries are always going to be there. And the material nature is a goddess. Her name is Durga. And she has many hands. One hand holds a trident. That trident, each point on that trident is one of the threefold miseries. And she's sticking like that. So you're always being jabbed. So one who is not disturbed in mind even amidst the threefold miseries. It's happening, and you're happy anyway. Or elated where there is happiness. Now why shouldn't you be elated there is happiness? Because if you're elated when there is happiness, then when the happiness comes in, you're going to be downcast. See, the two sides of the happiness and distress, they're two sides of the same coin. So as soon as, you know, you achieve your ideal sexual partner, then you're happy. When the ideal sexual partner goes away, then you're distressed. So once you buy into the happiness, you've bought into the suffering that's going to come as a consequence. That's why, actually, people can't even ultimately enjoy the temporary happiness that they get, because you know it's temporary. That whatever arrangements we make in this material world for happiness, it's, you know, fragile. It's a little Rube Goldberg invention that can fall apart at any minute. And so we're in anxiety as soon as we get something. Just like the man who wins the lottery, as he's got about, you know, 2 days of happiness before everybody descends upon him to get it away from him. And now I got to worry who's going to take it from me. I used to see Western movies, or different kind of movies when I was a kid, that somebody, you know, as soon as they get the gold, they got the gold, then immediately they're in anxiety because there's other guys coming to get it from them. And there's always a gunfight, and everybody ends up dead. You know, so there's anxiety. You get what you want, and then you're going to lose it. So we have to give up this effort to become happy by trying to win the battle against material nature. That's one of the things that we learn from anyone who's teaching us genuine spiritual life. Of course, many people's idea of religion is you just pray to God to keep the good things coming and keep the bad things away. You just make God part of your anxiety. And another person, you've got to... The real business that God can do is to get us out of the whole scenario of good and evil in the material world. So the question is, how is this possible? Because what this is not teaching us stoicism. I mean, some people are just good at enduring things. They're good at gritting their teeth. They're good at not complaining too loud. They're good at, holding their hand in the fire and not screaming. That's not what we're talking about. Being a stoic, just having a, high pain threshold. What Krishna's talking about is Krishna consciousness. What he's talking about is coming to the state of transcendence. Transcendence means the spiritual platform. Because the fact is that for each of us, there is a state of being that we can attain, in which we are experiencing permanent happiness that comes from within, that comes from the soul. That's what we have to discover. We are looking for happiness because we are, in fact, pleasure-seeking beings. Because the nature of the soul is to feel bliss. We are targeted toward bliss because bliss or happiness, continuous happiness, is our own nature. But what we are in material nature is not our nature. Our nature is we are spiritual beings. But we are in material bodies. And spirit cannot actually derive any happiness from matter. We're spiritual beings and we're trying to force some happiness out of this matter, and we're just like pumping a dry well. You can pump and you can pump and you can pump, and maybe a little drop comes out and you say, see, there's water. But it's not what you... So it's a dry well. No. So the material world does not afford us any real happiness. Now we can learn it. Best thing to do is take my word for it. Take Krishna's word for it. Or we can spend endless lifetimes in this world learning this lesson. When we've learned the lesson, then we can turn toward our real life. And that's what this Bhagavad Gita is for. Bhagavad Gita is for people who are materially exhausted, burnt out cases. People who have seen the truth. Now you can, as I said, you can suffer yourself. Or all you got to do is spend 5 minutes on the street corner and you can see the truth. All it took was Lord Buddha was one side of a corpse and he could understand the truths of the material world. You can see that the death rate is 100% here, and that you're going to die, and you could understand, hey, this is the Holocaust. I don't have to be put in some concentration camp. I'm already in it. Only it's just covered over with a little thin veneer, of attractiveness. But you just get a little bit beneath the surface, and you can see what's actually going on. Well, anyway, for those of us that are interested, there's a way out of this material world. And that's Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means the activity of developing our spiritual nature. Our problem is that we're trapped in the material world out of ignorance. And that ignorance means that we do not know who we are. We've accepted ourselves as material beings. We think that we are products of material nature. We've identified ourselves with the material body. The image that appears in the mirror, we think this is me. People think of discovering their real identity, but by their real identity, they mean something to do with their body and their mind. And that's not the real me. The real me is the spirit soul. And the spirit soul, the real you, is already eternal. The real you has never been born and will never die. It's the false you that came into being at a certain date. And will end at a certain date. It's like you see, you know, the parentheses with the dates in the middle. That's not us. It's not, our existence is not contained in those little parentheses they put after the names in the encyclopedias. Or you see them on the tombstones in the graveyard. So-and-so. Birth date, death date. That's the false you. You give up these bodies just like you take off your clothes at night. You can shed bodies, take on new ones, shed them. And the fact is, you can live without this body whatsoever. We think our life depends upon this body, where in fact it's the other way around. Our body depends upon our life. And the life comes from the spirit soul. This body is made of matter, just like this drum here. And matter is dead and lifeless and inert. This body is a machine. It's made of material nature, and gradually clever people are figuring out how to make machines that do whatever the body does. You have very clever prosthetic devices that can imitate hands, eyes, ears, so on. So you could gradually replace different parts of our body, just like there's the Jarvik 7 heart, you know, that they put inside of a guy, and it went on for a while, made out of plastics and space age metals and ceramics and stuff like that. So our body is nothing more than that. It's a machine. It's made of material nature. But we're in that machine. And what makes it, when I say we're in that machine, what does it mean? It's our consciousness. We are conscious. Each of us is sitting inside of a body. And we know that we're sitting here. We're each of us looking out of a pair of eyes. I'm looking out of this pair of eyes, and you're looking out of that pair of eyes. I'm hearing out of this pair of ears, and you're hearing out of that pair of ears. I'm here, you're there. Well, who is that that's there? That's you, the consciousness. And somehow or other, I got put in this machine, and you got put in that machine. You don't know how. And whatever machine we've got, we've identified with. I think I'm a man, somebody else thinks I'm a woman. I think I'm white, and somebody else thinks I'm black. I think I'm an American, somebody else thinks I'm an Indian. We're none of those stuff. We're just running around in different brand names, that's all. Like somebody's driving a Ford and somebody's driving a Chevrolet. Somebody's driving a truck and somebody's driving a convertible. So we've all got our different machines we've been assigned to. And we're running around in them a while. And the trouble is, we think we are these machines. But when the ultimate accident happens, really, we walk away from it unscratched. We don't know that. The machines all crash. They're all devastated, and we get out, and we get in another one. So we live very well without these bodies. So we should not be in any anxiety, actually. Nothing can hurt us. We are spirit soul. We're always in anxiety. Actually, every minute, you don't know this, but we are always in anxiety because the anxiety is so constant a part of our the background of our existence that we're not even aware of it unless suddenly it stops. What we're anxious about all the time is death. We're always nervous. And that nervousness is the anxiety of the fact that we feel like any minute I can die. Or that in the future I'm going to die. In fact, that any instant I'm going to die, we can all be sitting here talking and the airplane can fall from the sky or anything can happen or the earth can shake. And any minute we can all be, there's a guy walking around with a gun at our head and we don't know when it's going to go off. That's why we're nervous. Now, if we were really alert, we would be really freaking out. But we managed to quit thinking about it. But it's still there under the surface. I remember once I was sitting with a group of devotees, and there was a piece of machinery that had malfunctioned, some kind of piece of electronics, and it was going bzzz. Well, nobody could get it to stop, and we were eating. So after a while, we stopped hearing it, you know, and we were talking and eating our lunch, and then all of a sudden it stopped, and everybody went, whew. But then we realized how nervous we had been, that our voices were loud, and there was a kind of tension from this bzzz, although we had lost awareness of it. When it stopped, we felt it. Similarly, when the fear of the anxiety of existence goes away, you immediately feel, whew. And what is that feeling? Of whew. It's a feeling of absolute security. Right now, you only feel relatively secure. You feel really secure, like right now I don't have any life-threatening disease, for example. I feel relatively secure because right now my job looks pretty secure. I feel relatively secure because right now I'm carrying a lot of medical insurance. But absolute security, you don't have. Because you know the medical insurance, I may not be able to pay for it, I can lose my job at any minute, disease can come at any time. Absolute security means that no matter what happens, I'm safe. The worst can happen, and I'm safe. Imagine your worst nightmare, and my life goes on unaffected. That's the spiritual platform. When I was younger, we used to listen to a song by Bob Dylan called "It's All Over Now, Baby Blue." And there's one line, where everything is being taken away, and then it says, "The floor, too, is moving out from under you." So one day, the floor is going to be pulled out from under you, and your body's going to be pulled out from under you, and all your medical insurance and job security and everything, it's going to fail. The worst is going to happen. One day the worst will happen. If we are established our existence on the platform of the soul, we will not be affected. That's what he's talking about here. Who is not affected in even the midst of greatest difficulty? Is such a thing possible? Yes, it is. Not just that I have some theoretical conviction that I am a soul and I am not this body, but I actually live on the platform of the soul. That's what we call realized knowledge. That's why people practice yoga. Originally, I mean, nowadays they practice yoga to have, you know, thin thighs or something, but the original reason for practicing yoga is to achieve transcendence, to achieve ecstasy. The word ecstasy means ecstasis, means out of the body. So our original existence is ecstatic. The characteristics of the soul, Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. The reason sages and saintly persons and wise people have practiced spiritual life all through the years is to achieve this other state of consciousness which does not depend upon this body or upon the course of material nature. If we connect with Krishna, if we establish our life on the spiritual platform, there is a connection that is not severed, no matter what happens. There we revive a source of happiness that goes on, that does not depend upon the ups and downs of this material world. We lose our taste for pale things. We are not elated when material happiness comes because we don't depend upon the material happiness, the so-called happiness, for our well-being. That's why it's not that I've made myself a stoic or made myself endure. It's just that one has a state of happiness that doesn't depend upon the ups and downs, the good and bad of this material world. That's why. That's what Krishna consciousness is about. It's the excavation of our original happiness, which is what we are looking for. We are stupid not to take advantage of the opportunity to be able to do this. If we are inhabiting the bodies of animals, which we've all done our time in furry bodies of various sorts. We've had plenty of time to be animals. Now that we have come to the human form of life, let's not just be another kind of animal. So human life is meant for self-realization. If we just live like animals, if we just live the life of the senses, if we try to go on and be happy by sense gratification, guaranteed misery. Guaranteed every one of us in the material world is going to come to a bad end. There are no good deaths. So our business is to be finished with the dying business whatsoever. Right now we're caught in this. It's called samsara. Samsara means the cycle of repeated birth and death. It's true, this body crashes and we walk away from it. But we get another body, and again we identify with the body. We come squeezed out of a mother's womb, and we got this little body again. You know, say we get a human form of life. I got to go through the whole thing again. I got to pass stool in my diapers. Somebody's got to feed me. I got to be, fed on somebody's breast. I got to get this thing. I got a mother. I got a father. I got to go through childhood. I got to be ignorant. I got to go to school. I got to go through adolescence. The whole trip. I got to get old. I got to die. I got to the whole thing again. I got to go through the ups and the downs. I get attached to this. I get attached to that. The whole thing gets wiped out. People say I'm a success, or people say I'm a failure, whatever it is. I got to die again. The whole thing is a failure. I go through all that. I haven't learned a damn thing. Again in another womb. This is called samsara, the cycle of repeated birth and death. goes around and around and around. This is no way to live. Just because we don't actually die doesn't solve the death problem, because what we do is we identify with the material body and then we have to undergo the whole stupid thing again and again and again with slight variations. So the human life is time to end the cycle, to become established in our spiritual existence, and to just get free of the whole business. There's another life that's not this birth and death in this material world. That's our real life. There's another place. This world is not our home. People are worrying about the problem of homelessness, and there's people out in the streets. They got no home. You have no home. Every one of us is in a temporary shelter. Every one of us is going to get kicked out. We're all wandering on the streets. We've got no place to go. Some people have, you know, a low-class subway, great, and we have a high-class subway, great, but that's all it is. Real home is a place we do not have to get kicked out of. A place that is eternal and is full of knowledge and full of bliss. So we should make progress back home, back to Krishna. This is what we can do as human beings.